Given by L. Ron Hubbard on the 30th of October, 1952. The title of this lecture is The Role of Earth. It is 62 minutes and 10 seconds long. This recording has been re-recorded by the Flag Audio Unit of the Flagship Apollo of the Sea Organization.
If they can go over and take possession of the body of, let's say, we want to influence the premier of Wuthwuffistan. So we boot this Satan out and make this Satan go over and knock out the Satan in the wife of the premier of Wuthwuffistan. And then we are holding the body of the person that we sent over there, and they are still connected and in communication with this body. At which moment, pretty wild stuff walking through something like that. So we simply monitor, now all of a sudden, we find ourselves able to monitor the wife of the premier of Wuthwuffistan with great ease. And we get her into a tremendous affair with a court chamberlain, you see?
Yeah.
And we just get things swirled up like fire drill, and the next thing you know, he's dispossessed. They say his rent's up on Wuthwuffistan. Or something of the sort, because of scandal, because of this, because of that. It's a very neat political maneuver, and it is so neat that there's probably not a member of the class present who is along the category of four or five who hasn't done it. And that is the reason why a lot of fives and sixes are completely unwilling to get out of their heads. Because it's an overt act to send somebody out of his head. And you send people out of their heads over to some vast distance. And having sent these people over, they run into a body or something, which is then injured. Or something happens to their body right where you are. And you cause a complete foul-up and extinction of a being. And after that, when somebody comes along and tells you to get out of your head, you'll find a five is dragged desperately to stay in his head because he furiously objects to being sent around here, there, to these various points in the universe, and because there's a deadline on it of having sent people out of their head, and so on. So you work this back and forth and you get some of the most interesting results.
What's wrong?
This is all early stuff, by the way.
Oh, yes, I know, but you see what happened was... He then, when he eventually got the communication was now in present time, fine. He developed a round kind of pressure on top of his head. So I got him from inside his head where he was to look round, and there were four beams coming from somewhere to the right of him straight to the thing. So I got him to try and feel it. He couldn't do it. So I sprung him there and then, and I had no difficulty at all with him being out of his life, sitting solid in apathy. And I sprung him. He had enough stability outside to energize these, cut them, and send them back.
Good.
But I also questioned him about the form of nothing, not on Enid or
on him.
On him, yes.
Well, it possibly doesn't register too well on whatever it will be. Who's got a bad I want to call your attention to something of considerable interest to them. It would be terribly interesting, you see, if all of this were just a fairy tale on what is the state of the real universe. But you're engaged with certain problems, you're engaged with certain definite problems, and these problems have to deal with three certainties. And I'd better tell you something about these three certainties. But before I do that, there is a certainty called the meshed universe. Unless you can discover and unless you use a certainty on the meshed universe, what is actually the series of agreements which we call the meshed universe? Unless you are willing to use this data for what it is, you find yourself and your preclear in a state of delusion. In other words, you are saying something that is the meshed universe isn't the meshed universe. And that, of course, is a method of getting everything upside down, but royally. If you went around, for instance, telling everybody that there were no lorries going down Holland Park Avenue and being quite upset and so on because no lorries were going down Holland Park Avenue, and there they go down Holland Park Avenue, Well, you could do this silly trick of going out and saying, well, in view of the fact there are no lorries go down this avenue, it doesn't matter if I step under these big red things. And so on. It's just as idiotic as that, as when you get some kind of a planned, set-up condition of affairs. You examine this condition of affairs very carefully. You find out that it agrees to this extent as messed universe. That is, the definition of messed universe is, of course, the common denominator of agreement. That is the messed universe. It's a series of agreements. And when you're examining the messed universe, you're examining something solid. It's some agreement that you agreed on, the other people agreed with you on, and so on. Now, what did you agree on? And that is the messed universe. Now, when you take pre-clear after pre-clear after pre-clear after pre-clear, you put them on E-meters, you try to run them, you try to do this, you try to do that, straight on through, and you find in each and every case, you're finding the phenomenon of entities, bodies in pawn, communications, spaceships, other planets, locations, beingness in other states, and all of this, and you find this to be a consistent condition, you have fulfilled this definition of the messed universe. It's evidently agreed upon. And it's agreed upon because it's actually true. You couldn't go out and get somebody off the street and put an E-meter in their hands and start asking them questions on this without getting the same response as you'd get from your classmates. They would know nothing about this. I took a little girl one night during a demonstration and put her on the E-meter, and this little kid, I started to question her, and I was going to ask her about something just to show the class what the series of questions would be about current life, and the next thing you knew, this little kid was shaking in such a degree that the chair legs were rattling against the wall. And she says, you mustn't ask me any questions. She was going all to pieces on the thing. And I said, well, of course, it's perfectly all right for me to ask you questions. So on, where are you? And she said, I'm sitting before a big panel. And she says, I didn't used to sit there. I'm sitting there right now. That's me. I sit in front of this panel. This is my job. I'm not supposed to tell you what my job is, but there's this panel. And so forth. I says, communicator switchboard. No! And she just starts going on. I said, well, you wouldn't mind telling me the codes that go across the panel. And she passed right straight on out.
Interesting.
She'd never heard of bodies in pawn or other governments or invader forces or anything of the sort. So I snapped her around and carried on with the rest of the questioning and was simply able to do so because I happened to know. This is a very funny thing to say, but I happen to know our commanding officer. And gave her, silly, <isn't it? laughs> and gave her the messages which had gone across her panel an hour before. At which moment she immediately quieted down. And she said, well, I'll probably be taken all to pieces in the morning. I said, no, you won't be. She wasn't. But she was a communicator who was running a communications switchboard. Now, another time, just to give you consistency in this, another time in front of a class, much as this one, I picked up a girl, put the electrodes, terminals in her hand and started to ask her about this and that, and we find her sitting in front of a communication switchboard. Girl knows nothing about electronics. If you told her to describe to you how to answer a telephone, she would probably bog on it a bit, and yet she is a communicator. She's a communicator in a system known as the space stations. The space stations exist out here in the solar system. They use the asteroids. It's a very peculiar system. This solar system has a planet which is broken up, the asteroid belt. It gives a low gravity platform for takeoff and so on. And that broken planet is of considerable interest as a space station, that is to say, a galactic jump. Now, there aren't any planets up at this end of the galaxy which form a good galactic entering spot for incoming transport and other ships. And they, but this beautiful broken up planet here with a light gravity sun and so on makes a very ideal spot. And as a result, this area of the solar system got into prominence. It got into a little bit of prominence, and it's slightly a bone of contention. And there was the fourth invader force was here. The fifth invader force came in to use this area, and the name of this solar system is Space Station 33. And they started to use this area without suspecting that the fourth invader force had been there for God knows how many skillion years, had been sitting down, and they have their installations up on Mars, and they have tremendous screened operation. The Martian operation is a fascinating operation simply because it has gone into 100% holding force. And it does everything it does with tremendous coercion. It's sitting behind a defense screen of enormous size. And nobody, it's practically impossible to penetrate that except as a Thetan. And if you penetrate as a Thetan, you go through the Martian screen and they gotcha. Well, now the point is that the fifth invader force operated for some little time here in this system without suspecting the existence of the fourth invader force. And all of a sudden they started to lose crews and they didn't know where they were going. And they got a little more upset about it, and a little more upset about it, and a little more upset about it. And a battalion was sent down here to Earth 8,200 years ago, the 3rd Battalion. If you find somebody who is a member of the 3rd Battalion, why speak up? Because the whole battalion, its officers, staff, and so forth, was under the command of the Expeditionary Force commanding officer for this, not for just this area. All right, this sounds awfully wild. It just sounds terrifically incredible, but that's just incredible in the frame of reference of Earth. Actually, this isn't very incredible. So 8,200 years ago, they came down in the Himalayas, and the upper headlands, about 72 miles northwest of Khyber Pass, and put a base in there, and not believing that there was anything like an invader force operating in this system, failed to take any vaguest precautions with regard to their installations. They put up no defenses. After all, what was here? Nothing but Homo sapiens. It was just nothing. And no danger, no menace, and so on. And they were in this installation just a very short time when all of a sudden, with a terrific crash, the fourth invader force, which was a little more active than it has become since, knocked out this whole battalion. A battalion of that size is in the neighborhood of about 3,000 beings. And picked up all of its staff, all of its staff officers and so forth, and took them through to Mars, and then knocked them back into this human race here. They're still here. There are saucer crews here. There's all sorts of things on Earth here from the fifth invader force. Very interesting. This is directly and violently in opposition to the fourth invader force. And the fifth invader force, out of its own protection, took over Venus. All relatively modern times. Took over Venus and tried to stabilize the Venusian. If you called a fifth invader, though, a Venusian, he would probably shoot you out of hand because it would be a horrible insult. They merely monitor the government of Venus. And they leave Mars strictly alone. Now, this is really roughly a rundown of the, quote, political situation in the solar system. Now, that's very interesting because it gives you, as pre-clears, bodies in pawn of the fourth invader force. It gives you tremendous volume of personnel that have been poured down here for various nefarious purposes, all of them under some kind of a covert direction, typical game. Every goal they've gotten, they have a reason why they can't reach the goal. See, I mean, typical game, sort of an implant these people are operating on. They're relatively inefficient. But boy, can they hold on to things. Do they accumulate mess and that sort of thing. You've got your big holding operations. And you've got, running through this, a fifth invader force operation, which is strictly really disinterested in Earth. Not really interested in Earth at all, as such. Because Earth is a heavy gravity planet. And who the hell wants a heavy gravity planet? Earth would be much better off lying in chunks in an orbit around the sun. But naturally, that's a pretty rough assignment, blowing up something this size and putting it around, so nobody would do that. But completely aside from that fact, Earth has been used consistently as a prison. And it is a prison. And it is heavily screened. There are installations in Mongolia. There are installations in the Pyrenees here on Earth. There are installations down the mountains of the moon in Africa, which pick up very often people on death. And the Thetan just doesn't know what's going on. He's in a state of deep hypnosis, really. And the moment he finds himself in association with a dead body, the thing keys. And he reports to where he's supposed to go. And he's changed, moved around here and there, comes back down. He's really from death back to assumption of a new body and so on. It is ordinarily a time period of about 15 minutes. And he has three engrams in those 15 minutes. One, the death. Two, the wipe out and implant between lives. And three, the assumption, knocking out the GE and taking over a body at birth. Very interesting. All right, you run into these things with PCs. That's the only reason I'm talking to you about it, not to romance for you. A body in pawn utilizes not the Thetan, but ridges. Here's some of the most fascinating things. They'll take a Thetan and they'll build up ridges. And these ridges will act like personalities, and because their wavelength is known, they can be monitored. So you'll very often run into entities. And there are a certain number of entities, and they're in a certain order, and so on. And they act like beings in a person, but they are not beings. And you want to know how to get rid of an entity. A couple of authors here have run into this problem in the last week, and that's why I'm going over this ground with you. Actually, this is covered to a very marked degree in the course books, and it's covered in What to Audit.
Not perhaps with the frankness, but I'm covering it with you now, but it's covered.
Now, how do you get rid of an entity? You simply find where that entity is located geographically in the body. You do this with an E-meter. Your next step is to find out where the entity is stuck on the time track. And you'll find out that it's some sort of an incident having to do with the body and pawn. It'll be a between lives implant. It'll be something on this order. It may be that you will find that the person during an operation has suddenly conceived that he is dead, has reported back in. He obviously was not dead. And what they did was lay on to one of his ridges, which he took right along with him, of course, lay on to one of his ridges the fact that he mustn't know and he mustn't tell. Very often when he appeared back in the body with the violence of pain of an accident or something of this sort, he killed the body and pawn to which he was very nebulously attached while he was here. Body and pawn, something floating in fluid or under an electronic, constant electronic bath. Yeah, you find these described, they're lying on a pallet or something of this sort. The body is completely motionless. And at the foot of this will be something that looks like a window, and it's not a window.
Now, here's a big joke for you. You can take a body, you can take a pre-clear and coax him to knock off a body in pawn. Make the body dive through one of those, quote, windows. Make him raise enough hubbub and hurrah so that he'll be gunned down by guards or something of the sort. It's really not much of a shock because, you see, he's not in that body. He's just nebulously monitored by that body because somebody can walk in, stir up the body, give the body a command, and he himself will perceive the command. This is a relay system of ridges. Now, if you get rid of one of those things, run out the point where the ridge is stuck on the time track. You just run it out as an incident. You ask the pre-clear to move into that area of his body and push on through the incident as though it happened to him. And he will tell you in a moment or two, but this didn't happen to me. This is just lying here. Up to that time, he thought it happened to him. It didn't. Really, what it was a facsimile laid down on one of his ridges. And you will find that as many as five or more bodies in pawn are being held here and there throughout the universe for one pre-clear. Mm-hmm. All they do is grab the phenomenon of ridge, you see, and they throw a facsimile into play on that ridge, and the person can be monitored. Now, the most horrible of the entities is the stomach area entity because it's in conflict with the GE. This entity is quite often responsible for nervous stomachs and so forth. If you want to know something about cold-blooded brutality and why people here on Earth are so completely, horribly fixated on let's be kind and let's get it organized one way or the other, It is the utter, brutal disregard for beingness which you find throughout the systems. What you have here, and consider humanitarian and so forth, is a very interestingly built-up system. There's a caste system which is exercised in other parts of the solar system which would appall the most viciously minded duke who ever lived here on Earth. There's slavery and what men are put to in that slavery, how men are treated and so forth. Now, for instance, the body in pawn, which will have something to do with this stomach entity, the stomach entity has become so terrified, they will actually go along and just kick it or shove needles into it or something to make a pain shock come down and hit somebody here on Earth. They're fed with forced, quite often, fed with a sort of a paste of some sort, and it's put in something that looks like a grease gun. You see, you just stuff the nozzle of a grease gun down the throat and push this thing down, and that's feeding. Really very interesting. But you can keep a body alive for an awful long time under these conditions. You'll find people who've had bodies in pawn for some 10,000 years. They just go up and give this body just a little bit of a tremble, of course, and it just comes completely to pieces. Well, now, as far as reality of this stuff is concerned, it has not generally been accepted here on Earth that such things existed. But I notice that we have what's known as science fiction here on Earth. I notice we have that. And noticing it many, many, many years ago, I thought this is a good gag, so I wrote a lot of it. You wouldn't dare write real science fiction. Not real science fiction. Nobody's guts could take it. So you're looking around for brutality and what's mauling your pre-clear around and why he's in apathy and so forth. You better readjust your sights again as to what it takes to aberrate a being. It takes plenty. It takes a terrific magnitude of incident to do anything to a human being. Do anything to a thing. Up in the billion volt category. All right. Now, as I say, this sounds science fiction-y. Well, don't let it sound science fiction-y to you, because the truth be told, it's not science fiction. In the first place, it's not fiction, and it really isn't very closely resembling what you read and call science fiction. Science fiction is just a very chimerical sort of a picture of it. Space is wild. There aren't any writers down here, and there's no audience down here that could take real stuff about space. It's wild. And well, let me tell you a little story. This isn't just a story. One of the Fifth Invader Force, an officer, came down here to take a survey. And this is very adventurous. And in order to take a decent survey of the place, of course you understand the Fifth Invader Force officer carries a doll. They don't carry bodies, they carry dolls. Their identification is a doll. It's a very little flimsy mechanical affair that you can make talk and walk and so forth. They're cute. They're about a meter tall. They're very light. Therefore, you don't need, you see, you don't use oxygen in saucers. And all of this stuff in science fiction is rococo. Boy, it's rococo beyond rococo. It's just simple beyond simplicity. You have this little doll, and the thetan energy that a fellow puts out is quite sufficient to monitor the control switchboard in the back of the doll. That's all. Simple. And he tunes it up. He's got his wavelength tuned to it and so on. It's he can walk it around, and he has, at the same time, in installations, he has what you would classify as human beings. And there are people in bodies who are doing work in various installations up through the system. Bodies exist. I'm talking about officers. They're pretty high-order things. So, here's a doll. He's monitoring this doll. And he parked his doll and picked up one of the persons connected with the ruling house of Habsburg and went on a survey of the domain and took notes on it. Unfortunately, he didn't have any foggy notion of how violently this particular prince was hated. And this prince was assassinated. And before this officer could disconnect, so forth, the Thetan charge, which suddenly sprung up in the assassinated prince, kaboom, was sufficient to overwhelm and overpower this officer momentarily. And he went through the screen. I'm telling you this because it's an average story, not a spectacular story. Not because it's different, but because it's the same. And he went through the screen, kaboom. And he landed on an installation, well, about a few hundred miles north of the equator, what you consider north, is trying to translate the words and directions, of on Mars. Boom, he went through. And the Martian said, oh boy, what do we got here? Wonderful. Wonderful. A high-volume Thetan. He must be a space officer of some kind or other. So they took a couple of standards, put them down at the foot of the cells, or because they had a good identification, threw a body in pond and so forth, and they decided they were going to use him back here against Earth. He wouldn't transport. So they just threw him in the clink, you might say. They kept him there. One fine day, he took the body in pawn and threw it through the guard screen and blew it up. Was able to do this. And himself got free on the back concussion, you see, of this explosion, and went out. He went back down to station we call X, and said, where have I been for the last 27 years? Something about the order you should ask. And he wrote out a chit, and they got a couple of cruisers, and they put together a few commando forces, and they took that installation to pieces, but thoroughly to pieces. They took what Martians were in that installation and so forth, and put them in cans. As far as anybody knows, they're still up there. but blew this thing, frankly, off the face of the map. Most Martian stations are much tougher than this to crack. That's an incident of the tiniest character in a person operating. Now I'm telling you that incident because it's a fairly modern incident in the last few hundred years. You'll find lots of incidents like this in your pre-clears and lots of a background like this, and they can't understand why their values are this way and why their values are that way, and they're trying to fit the most outrageous set of Earth values up against the values which they have had for God knows how long, and they just won't mesh. And this assists in the oblivion that you find people in. By the way, this is a matter of small interest. Within the next century, that same officer, had completed his survey back down here and is up on one of the space stations now. But you see, you can't be sure exactly what you've got your hands on. And just because I have told you this story, and just because I've mentioned such stories to you, as somebody with a body in pawn for 10,000 years and being monitored and sent all over the place, and that sort of thing, there's no reason why you should tell it to your pre-clear. But it gives you a line on what to ask. Just a slight lead, a question. You say, where did it happen? He could say Kentucky or Sussex. But he normally won't. He'll say Mars, Venus, or give you some planetary name you've never heard of. You've got to audit these ridges through to get rid of these ridges if you're going to treat the body. But you understand that when we're working with this sort of thing, we are, to a large degree, treating the body. And this is a question of who the hell cares. You're treating a body. Bodies are nickel a million. If you only knew it, any one of you here, any one of you, could pick himself up the line and go out and pick up anybody you see. This person's going to die someday. Pull him out, pat him on the head, and say, Mars. They go. I mean, it sounds very horrible to you, doesn't it? It sounds like a terrible violation of private rights. That's because you've decided upon a much higher level of action. And yet, what do you know? It happens every once in a while. It happens. You could do this. Now, if you are out of your body and stable, and if your pre-clear is out of his body and stable, the point I'm trying to make is that you have escaped from and stepped sideways from the liability of sudden body shock. If you have done this all by itself so that the body can be hurt and so on, regardless of the state of knowingness, regardless of the ability to put out energy, regardless of any other of these abilities, you have achieved a knowing immortality for your prequel, or for yourself. You have stepped actually out of the line of stimulus response and being the victim on all of this sort of thing. And of course, it makes a tremendous difference to a person. You don't realize how widely one's values change on such a thing. Because it just doesn't matter how many bodies would kick the bucket. It doesn't matter. You would come up shining on the map. You want to perfect that skill because it's the only thing that ever got you in trouble. You are unable to stay outside of bodies when they were given a sudden shock or when they were hurt. So get up through the command range on a body. Don't get stay down along the other level, and actually what you've bought is an immortality. So your body gets knocked off, so what? Very few people have a viewpoint, even when they've been out of their bodies, developed up to the level that it should be. I'm going to give you today some very vital data on this, because I've seen that there are two or three points which have not been clearly grasped. And in view of that, why, let's get the data to clearly grasp them. Now, I don't care. You can say I'm telling you fairy tales about this sort of thing or something. we won't worry about the credulity or incredulity of the data. Don't force this data on your preclear, because if you force it on your preclear, you will throw something into violent restimulation that you will be sorry for. But if you find your preclear is having an awful time over something or other in some zone of his body, let's say, some entity is stuck on the time track in that zone, and it might be one of the reasons why he can't get out of his body. And if you're going into the business of cleaning up bodies, you've got to be able to resolve the problem of entities. And you resolve the problem of entity by finding out where this entity is located in the body, and then finding out where it's stuck on the time track, and you will find a death or a transplant or something of the sort occurring at that point. You ask the Thetan, the individual, to sort of move into that area and move through that incident and bring that entity up to present time. Now, he has a tendency to give the entities complete credit for beingness, and the entities don't have beingness. They react to passing energy. The energy goes out from the individual through the entity, and the energy comes out from the environment and goes to the individual and passes through the entity. So the environment can re-stimulate the entity. The pre-clear can re-stimulate this entity. You see, and your pre-clear looks at this and wonders why, in the name of common sense, he acts that way. It's because when he puts out energy in that direction, that entity, stimulus response-wise, that ridge goes into effect. And he has no accounting for the fact, because he didn't put anything in effect. And when somebody scolds him suddenly or something of the sort, he's perfectly willing to bite their head off, but instead of that, he feels scared to death. Why? This is unaccountable. So he begins to believe there's something wrong with him. And the truth of the matter is, there isn't anything wrong with him. That's the truth. The only thing you could say would be wrong with him is he's has a lot of ridges around him which have facsimiles on them. And these ridges can be thrown into re-stimulation, and then he stands there and watches this. So you see, it's a mystery to him. So he begins to think after a while, I must be nuts. No, he's saying, yeah, I've got some... There isn't any such thing as a sane entity, because there's no such thing as sane stimulus response activity. But don't think your entity can't think it can think. It has a certain low order of beingness. It's not alive. It's running on the Thetan's energy, you see. But because of associative nature of energy and other things, it can think. It can act. You can talk to an entity and have it talk back to you, and so on. You can throw the attention of the Thetan around the body so as to re-stimulate the entities, one after the other. And therefore, but you do this like this. Now you say, all right, now this right outboard entity. Now I'm talking this right outboard entity. So-and-so. And the speaker says so-and-so. And you say, do you like ice cream? And he says, no, it says it doesn't like ice cream. What you've done, you see, is take the Thetan's energy beam and you've thrown it out here onto this ridge, because you said the right outside, didn't you? So that's direct stimulus response. It's just a ridge, and there it sits, and you throw the Thetan's energy at it, and your energy's going at it. Don't omit that point. You're re-stimulating it. You've got a beam on it, and he's got a beam on it, and so, of course, it'll talk. Cute. Very, very humorous mechanism, actually, but people seldom feel like laughing, because they can make a man feel like he's being torn to bits. You talk about fear, and you talk about agony and being pinned down and all the rest of this. This is on these darn ridges. Now you're looking at what I've been describing here. You're looking at the reactive mind. You're not just looking at something that's vaguely like the reactive mind of the first book. You're looking at the reactive mind. The first book could be said to be a description of ridges and the behavior of ridges. If you want to know a lot more about how outrageously ridges can behave and so forth, just read about the reactive mind in book one, and that is actually the ridge. That's the ridge's behavior. So the reactive mind has geographical locations in the body, is found to be energy ridges on which facsimiles have been affixed. And the stimulus-response character of them causes very, very aberrated behavior. They have an associative quality. That is to say, they're this absurd logic. That's one thing near another thing and so forth. But they're down closer to an identity. A equals A equals A equals A than they are to thinking, really. And that's the way you tell what this thing is. It's reasoning on an A equals A equals A equals A. You can actually ask an entity certain questions. And it will give you identity responses. Korzybski, in his tremendous piece of work there, was trying madly to differentiate over, above, around, under, alongside of, and for God's sakes, let's do something about this A equals A equals A equals A of an electronic ridge to which facsimiles are affixed. Now, you want to know roots out of this trouble, how you get away from this trouble. He points out a root. His root, however, although Hayakawa and some of the boys in general semantics believe there's a therapy involved in it, there isn't. You can train when you're training into differentiation, and all you're doing is training in a secondary circuit response. You see, you're saying the fellow starts to identify and then he gets very careful and differentiates. Well, now he's got a circuit set up that differentiates what he started to identify. And of course, all you're doing really is giving a lot of credit to some ridge. You're giving the ridge credit of beingness, and the guy will get worse. He won't get better. So watch crediting ridges. That's true, isn't it? You watch that happen. That's right. So, if you must be concerned with the body, the Thetan, when he moves out, will generally leave the bulk of these ridges in the body. If he moves out knowingly, he just leaves these ridges sitting in the body, and so on. But he has built them up, and he's carried them around, and he's pulled them in, and he's done these various things with them. He's finally fixed this body with a great many ridges. These ridges have a very strict pattern, they have very strict behavior, and this outrageous story I have been telling you about space stations and all that sort of thing is very muchly responsible for the state in action, the weird, insane character of these darn ridges today. Now you're going to find pre-clears once in a while who will start giving you messages. Of course they're on a communication line. Why shouldn't they give you messages? Some guard's been walking past some cell where there's a body in pawn, and all of a sudden this body stirs. Bodies are not supposed to do that. So he says, oh, somebody just died. But then it doesn't stir the way a body stirs when it just died. He'll say, somebody's monkeying around. Probably a few years ago they said, oh, some damn hypnotist. Nobody will believe him anyway. They didn't do too much about it. But that's not been the case here in the last year or so. They've been fascinated. And they're just about as helpless as babies in diapers because they've got a holding operation. They're guilty of tremendous overt acts themselves. They have no method of attack. They have been influencing via the mind for so long that they've actually lost their initiative to do anything else. And if anybody was going to do anything to Earth, on a violent side, or anybody was going to do anything to people on a violent side, it would be somebody like the Fifth Force. But the Fifth Force has completely opposite interest in Earth. It does not want to do anything to Earth. If anything is protecting Earth at this time, it's the Fifth Force people. But isn't it strange that you will find the Fifth Force people occasionally have a body in pawn here? You'll find an occasional body and pawn from the Fifth Force. When you do what you do, it'll be a different proposition because it's monitored by consent. The guy's here with a comm line set up. And he's almost in a state of knowingness concerning exactly where he came from and what he's doing. It's a different proposition entirely. You have the difference between a young, ambitious race, you might say, and an old, decayed, caved-in race, and the two just don't mesh. They don't fight on the same battleground or anything. So there's no active concept involved here of battle or action. Beyond this insidious action through the mind, we all of a sudden find Russia and the United States going to war. Why? Silly, huh? Everything would militate in favor of peace. And yet the most insane things will suddenly happen. Some joker in the U.S. will suddenly order all the ships into port at Pearl Harbor. Suddenly, inexplicably. And then fix it up so that none of the messages to warn Pearl Harbor get there. Insists on putting them all in top secret code. Here are telephones lying all over the place. Pick up the telephone and say, hey, we just got word there are a couple of Japanese aircraft carriers staying right off Pearl Harbor. And I know we told you all to go into port there in the last 3 days and secure for Annapolis inspection. Take all the ammunition out of your magazine, put it below. All the ready boxes and that sort of thing. But, you know, there's a little danger here of a fight starting. And just a few hours ago, you sunk a Japanese submarine right outside the harbor. And how about snapping and popping and getting on the ball there? And you probably ought to be able to put the ammunition back in the ready boxes and maybe a few of those ships get out of port just in case. Oh, no. No, we'll go and find the admirals and the generals. We'll find they all at parties. So we'll have a conference with them tomorrow. And then tomorrow we'll put it all in code that takes about 2 hours to encode. And then it'll have to be 2 hours to decode. And we'll get that word of warning to Pearl Harbor at 10 a.m. Pearl Harbor time Sunday. How do things like this happen? The man that did those have stood up and asked bluntly where their loyalty and what their actions were and their intentions. You would find out that they were completely sincere in their jobs. Just completely sincere. I mean, they tended to do the very best they could for people and nations and everything else. But all of a sudden, from some quarter, in sails one of these wild ones. One of these terrifically wild bits of business that you just say, can't exist. Well, the human race will shadow box with this for a long time if it remains the human race. It'll keep on doing this. So don't expect that your pre-clear will be able to explain completely some of his actions during his lifetime. Little actions. It is wonderful what small minds can think of as worthy goals. Very small minds. As far as the Martian operation is concerned, I mean, let's all go out and play hopscotch, something real serious. Bunch of old fat boobs sitting around in the dirt, playing big, important games. But they're playing an important game which runs an insidious line, and a therapist all of a sudden encounters. Because he's trying to make somebody sane. And he finds as long as you dodge away from this and say it doesn't exist, or that sort of thing, that you're going to find a certain number of cases you aren't going to be able to do anything for. That's just inevitable. Now, if you want to do something for those extra cases, those additional cases, well, I just remember some of this data which you had in the coursebooks, and remember some of the data I'm giving you now. You might say to yourself, oh, no, my God, not that, and solve the case. Thousands of them, huh? Well, I didn't mean to talk very long-windedly on that subject. I'm sorry, it happens to be something in which I'm interested. It's as curiosa, of course, strictly. And it's something, if you've got good sense, you won't talk about much out in public. Oh, yeah, you have. Our real refuge, as far as friends and communication is concerned, is really us. Our refuge is us. Now, by the way, there's a lot of speculation goes around. Every once in a blue moon, I'll pull some kind of a gag. I pulled one a while ago. I didn't pull it intentionally. I say, yes, I knew her commanding officer. That happens to be true. But it doesn't mean that I have, let me make my position very clear, that I have any axe to grind with regard to this. I don't have. I'm not part of this fight. It's just something that you take a look at and you say, oh, no. And then you get interested and you get rather partisan about the thing as far as your sentiments are concerned. It's the partisan of watching a bright new operation and watching an old dead operation and watching an awful lot of beings being terribly unhappy and awfully mucked up and all fouled up like fire drill. For what reason? Weird, beautiful reason. So that a planet which could get along very nicely is just running off the rails all the time. I mean, nobody can get anything going in this planet. I mean, not slowly supposed to get together and so on. What benefit is it to anybody? The funny part of it is, it has no benefit. It is in the line of a terrible habit as far as the Fourth Invader Force is concerned. Now, as you go around, you'll find there's machinery stuck out here. A lot of it. You chase your PC around in various directions. The next thing you know, he's going to say there's lines going here and there's lines going there and there's a big machine sitting over here and there's other machines sitting there and so on. Well, don't let him monkey with them too much. Those are Fourth Invader Force machines. This whole area of this end of the galaxy is booby-trapped. And those machines are bearcats, some of them, to turn off. And although they may look like they're very easy to turn off, it's something like the picture. The Germans used to use this as a booby trap. They put a picture, a slightly askew, over a fireplace or something in a bombed cottage or something, you see. And your own troops had come in and somebody couldn't resist straightening up the picture. And of course, it was trapped. And it would blow up and blow everybody up in the room. They had to straighten up the picture. Now, actually, you have no great interest in these machines because they can't do very much one way or the other. And the truth of the matter was, if you were to hand a map to the Fifth Invader of some of these machines that you had found and that sort of thing, you'd be only too happy to send a cruiser, something of the sort, and blow them off the map. But it'd take a few mega, mega, mega volts to do very much to these machines. Now, you'll find occasionally a sickness will set in on a pre-clear a very short time after he's been on one of these excursions. That's because he's hit an antipathetic wave, which is rigged to be a nice wave. So don't let your pre-clear sit around and listen to beautiful music or something of that sort. That's a theta trap. Don't let him go around. He says, oh, you know, there's the most gorgeous-looking temple or something. I keep going over there and looking at this beautiful temple. And you say, wait a minute, what's it look like? Oh, it's just gorgeous, the most beautiful architecture. You say, come home now. And he will, come home now. Because all of a sudden, your pre-clear is going to be in appetite over tin cup into a theta trap. Theta traps are trapped ordinarily with aesthetics. The other type of trap is a mechanical trap, which has a matching wavelength in its construction. It's a post or something, and the Theta throws a beam. He's just passing through the area, and all of a sudden something echoes at his wavelength. Now, the next thing you know, he thinks somebody he knows is over there. He goes over to look, and then the second he tries to get off of it, the more energy he puts out, the more active the trap becomes. There's no energy in the trap, but the energy that Thetan himself is putting into it. He'll stay on these things for God knows how long. Those are types of traps. As far as the Thetan being very badly implanted is concerned, how can you implant an energy unit? That's an interesting question. How can you plant an energy unit? It's a question which you should be awfully interested in, because you can't. You can give it some ridges, but it can always move out from amongst these ridges. You have to get it to agree and change its mind about something. And once it's agreed on something of the sort, why, then it's possible for it to be in a state which keeps on holding onto so ridges. So the most important thing you can do with a Thetan is postulate processing, not ridge throwing around and the rest of it. I've said this before, and I wish to point it up and punch it up now. Postulates. You can take any preclear you know and run from bottom to top of a scale, that scale I gave you many weeks ago, just to change one's postulates. And if you keep this up, you go on this way, you'll get better, 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 better. But we have, in all of these wild pitches, a terrific amount of coercion. It's very covert, all of this overtness toward beings. It has to be, because you cannot actually aberrate permanently an energy unit. You cannot kill it. All you can get it to do is change its mind. That is to say, alter its postulates, its concept of beingness. You can get it to alter its concept of beingness, really. And if you can get it to alter its concept of beingness, then it'll keep on holding these silly ridges all around itself with facsimiles on them, and the ridges keep going into stimulus response, and because your Thetan did not know the mechanism, he actually lacked knowledge of it. He couldn't beat it. He couldn't beat this game, so he'd stay at a low level. Now, possessing knowledge of this is not really the same thing as being a Theta clear. I wish to impress that upon you. Let me give you the example of my boy, Nibs, Elron Hubbard Jr. Interesting thing lately, he's a nice kid. He is a rather standard, hot rod, American kid, terrific sense of irresponsibility, and a nice kid. His friends all liked him. That's what you judge a kid by. He got along well with people and that sort of thing, but he had practically no goals, nothing to look forward to or anything. Standard young America today, being picked up by the draft and shoved here and shoved there. All right. He had 7 hours total processing, up to stable outside of his body and so forth. It was in the course of about 36 hours, he completely changed his attitudes, personality, and so forth. Got a terrific sense of responsibility. He was reaching back and picking up pieces of knowledge of this sort and that sort and fitting them together and getting himself an education off the track. He was going around trying to help other guys out. He was doing this and doing that. And he'd sobered down. He's a guy who really would care to know all of a sudden, not just this kid. Fantastic change. He went along for a little while, and he thought, he was very savvy now. He was perfectly satisfied that he had reached a state of knowingness where he could cope with things. I got a letter from him not too long ago, and boy, that boy had been having to burn the midnight oil and the morning oil and the afternoon oil in trying to catch up with the knowledge of Book One, the course book, Science of Survival, Self-Analysis, and so forth, just so he could live. I got the idea, just so he could stay up in state. This knowledge is vital. It's an education which one has to have to remain this wise. See, because if you don't know about this, and you don't know about that, and don't know about something or other. It was not knowing about this and about that and about something or other that made it possible for any of you to be tricked into something in the first place. It's just not knowing this data, which is fascinating to you. You should say, yes, if you get a guy up to a high state of knowingness, he should know all of this. I refer you to Science of Survival, the theory of interbulation of theta with mest, and then it's disinterbulation again. That is data of the mest universe, which is being gained. Your potentiality of knowingness goes way high, but this does not mean that data goes that high. To remain stable, Nibs is doing a terrific job right now. By the way, he's just started in to teach a theta clearing course in Phoenix as of today. And he's using the tapes which you heard and stuff I've written him in letters and so forth. And everybody was having a very hard time with it, mistakes one way or the other. And they were making it the hard way, and he was very interested in getting the show on the road and so forth. So he wanted to come over here very desperately, very badly. And he was all booked, and he had his boat passage and his passport, and then that time was running short, and he was going to pick up an airplane and come over here, and he was going to do anything. And he finally phoned me up on the telephone, and he says, aren't you going to let me come over there? And I kept telling him that the operation in Phoenix was in very, very great need of his services, and he finally buckled down, and he's running that operation now. He's 18. And of all the guys anywhere in that vicinity, there's just two people that I would trust a very great deal. One of them's old Althea Hart, who is a hardest boiled, soft-hearted character you ever saw. A great guy. And the other one's Nibs, which is fantastic. You don't know American, but you know how irresponsible some British youth is. Well, just as a strata of responsibility. Well, now if you multiply it by about 100, you've got American youth today. And all of a sudden we've got a man, a very responsible man. Quite interesting. And by the way, his attitude toward me is very, very interesting. It might be an interesting little datum you might like to know about. He used to look on me rather resentfully so long because, you see, during the years he was growing up and so on, I was off to the wars and off on an expedition here and there, and I wasn't home. And his home life blew up pretty much, so on. So he...